been a primary author of two of the largest tax cuts in the history of our state.
Let the eagle soar.
Son, go outside and dust yourself off. And when you feel good again, come back in and talk to me. We know what they would have done because we know what they did.
Hero. I've been there. Hero.
We are going to fight for Missouri values. We are going to defend life. And we are going to protect our constitutional rights.
What I am trying to do to simply make tomorrow just a little bit better than today.
Welcome to another edition of the Hashtag MoLedge podcast. Becky, Ben, and I are here today with Senator Bob Dixon. Now, Senator Dixon is a member of a body that was in well past 5:30 a.m. last night, and I'm sure our sponsors for public services and St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce would love to hear a breakdown of what happened last night.
Well,
where to begin? And I have to interrupt and give a shout out to Scott Fawn. He was the last reporter standing.
He was
taking a nap right now. So
he even skipped the Cardinals game.
So yeah, just to be clear, he works hard, contrary to popular belief. He does work hard. Anyway, back to last night.
Yeah, I looked up and I saw Scott. It was when I was still here. You know, we've been down this road several times this year in the Senate, and part of it is just getting used to one another. This is a new legislature. So, getting, I think, comfortable with what each other's red lines are, if you will. But we have to be able to function. And we're past that point, in my opinion. This is the second time in recent memory where we've just gone to the wall in a game of wills. And it was very apparent to me that neither side was going to win. And I'm not talking about political, partisan side divide, because it was members within our own caucus. So I took my phone and left and got some sleep. I had a large group of constituents coming up this morning. And, of course, would have come in if there was a vote, but I knew very well that there wasn't
what history has shown you.
I mean, when you have members saying we're not going to allow anything to come to a vote, you pretty well know that nothing will. So I don't regret my decision. I would have come in if there was a vote, but I don't think we can just continue to reward that behavior, and we have to be able to function. So
now, whenever you say that behavior, are you talking about somehow the debate is about tax credits, yet whenever you tune in to listen, they're talking about zoos?
Well, there's a lot of things, and of course in the Senate, you don't have to be germane. Your discussion doesn't have to be germane, as you know. There was discussion about that. There was some discussion about other issues like the prescription drug monitoring bill that was passed on Thursday. Still a lot of leftover angst about that. I voiced some expressions in frustrations on Thursday. I think we have to function. We also have to be cognizant of that there is a world outside of this body. And so, there was some leftover angst over the passage of that bill. But this is a body of consensus, but at the end of the day, whoever is in the minority, and I don't mean the minority party, I mean the minority opinion in the body, has to realize that there isn't a way to win. There is a way to compromise and make the legislation better. But, you know, one of the things we'll talk about today is the nuclear option in the Senate. The rules provide for ending debate. In a functional Senate, it's never necessary, because everyone respects everyone else.
Because the point of a filibuster or the PQ, the nuclear option, is to force people to compromise, right? Not just stonewall it out for as long as humanly possible. In theory, there should be an end game other than kill the bill, right?
Because it doesn't work. That's exactly right. And a real filibuster is amendments, improvements to the bill, changes, compromise. Reading something out of Dr. Seuss or whatever it may be is not a filibuster. That's just shenanigans, really. And, you know, there may be a point at which that's the only thing someone can do, but that's when you say, I'm going to take the temperature in the room and realize that the best thing for me to do, whatever the issue is to just vote no. But I can't stand in the way of, you know, majority opinion. It also depends on what the issue is, because some of us were talking last night about Missouri history and what Thomas Hart Benton did as a U.S. Senator. He stood on principle, he stood for what was right, and the legislature was going to punish him for it. But you just have to, it takes wisdom to navigate it, and so.
So one question I have, when I'm hearing debate on the floor, you're hearing people talk about what a freshman senator it should do or what they shouldn't do or if they should fall in line. Is there some sort of unwritten rules of the Senate about how a freshman kind of should pay their dues a little bit or fall, you know, what's the perspective over there? Because you heard some senators kind of going back and forth about, you're a freshman, I'm a junior or senior, you know, this is how it is. Well, is that a few loud voices or is that generally how you guys operate?
Yeah, I have some mixed opinions on that. Number one, in the era of term limits, we're all freshmen.
That is true.
I'm sorry. I voted for it. I think it was the biggest mistake that's been done because we empowered the lobbyists, the bureaucrats, the political parties, the consultants. We gave our birthright as citizens away to people who are unelected, you know, and we thought we were doing a great thing. But when the voters realized what they have done, that they have handed over all of their power, they may see that solving one problem, we actually created others. And this is one of them. But to answer your question, in the old Senate, actually in the old House, a new member was sort of, taken under the wing by a member who had been here for a while and was sort of tutored on the ways to get things done, the rules, the unspoken things, the unwritten things. And it was the old wisdom of be seen and not heard and learn. And then in the era of term limits, you can't do that.
Your time
that.
Is limited, right? You don't have 2 years to burn.
Right, you can't do that. And so you come down here to serve your constituents. And I think also in the current phenomenon that we find ourselves in, that's why I say there are, we're really all freshmen, because the respect train goes, the road goes both ways. And I think we've got to be mindful that even though someone is a freshman, their constituents sent them here in this era of term limits, and they have every right to get up and speak. But everybody has to be cognizant that there's more to the world than just them and their constituents. You know, respect is, and putting others and their concerns ahead, not all the time, but just being thoughtful, makes the world function, and it would make the Senate function a little better.
Now, we did an online poll again this week, and this week's question was, should the Senate have a nuclear option? The poll was brought to you by our sponsors, Republic Services and St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce. 60% of those who voted said yes, there should be a nuclear option. 33% said no, and 7% said what? So, addressing that 7%, Senator, what is the nuclear option? Should the Senate have one? Why does it have one?
Well, let me, with all due respect to those that may have answered the poll, I hope that everyone realizes we're talking about Jefferson City and not Washington and the U.S. Senate, and we're certainly not talking about the Korean Peninsula here.
Though maybe we should be.
Yeah. So the answer is we have a nuclear option, and Senates going all the way back to Roman times have been bodies of their council of equals. It's a council of equals, and there is a nuclear option. It's called the previous question. It's in our rules. Yesterday during the memorial service, we were reminded that the first time it was used between statehood in 1821 all the way up to the late 1960s, it had never been used. And the reason for that is because whether the legislature was meeting in St. Charles or the two previous buildings here on this site, there was a mutual respect which prevented the Senate from ever getting to that point. Now, when they did that PQ, it was actually on a tax increase. A governor of the same party was pushing the conservative Democrats in the Senate, and the floor leader, Earl Blackwell, was very opposed, and the Democrats wound up, you know, doing the previous question and voting him down. And as we were reminded yesterday, he left and never came back to the building after that because he lost, and his power diminished significantly. But that's what happens when you utilize it. It's sort of the eye for the eye. Everybody's blind at that point. And so trying to avoid getting there is statesmanship. The problem that I is we're getting to the point, and I've never voted for a PQ. There have been plenty of possible bills relating to everything from right to work to abortion. I have voted against PQs. And I think that is, it would behoove us to get back to that point. Filibuster, actually do a real filibuster. Don't just get up and read Dr. Seuss. Things better. But people who refuse to do that have to know, as we have seen, it destroys the Senate for the rest of the session. And I hate to see us get to that point. But we do have one, an option. Or you would have people running roughshod over others, which is...
So there's a world outside of this body. And something I'm always curious about is people's constituents. What do they want to happen that isn't?
The only thing that I have consistently heard from any sizable number of folks from my district, just people I talk to on the street, they want their driver's license to work next January. They want government to function. They don't, you know, they don't want... They're not a fan of having the government record all of their data. I'll grant that. But, you know, we understand the problems with Real ID, but they want their license to function. They want it to be operational. They don't want to hand over power to the federal government, but they want the option of being assured they don't have to go get a passport to go to Kansas. And... I agree with them on that. That's really the only thing I hear from my constituents, other than just leave me alone. You know, but up here, and the reason I say there's a world outside this building, we can get so wrapped up in the nitty-gritty details of what happens in this bubble that we forget there is a reality outside of this building. You know, I mentioned on Thursday... Look, I understand the liberty argument of the prescription drug monitoring program that was proposed or is proposed, but we can cling to one argument for so long that we've lost the sense of that reality out there. And my point was, how do I have liberty if my streets are overrun with drugs to the point that I really can't go outside my house? And we have communities in this state that, unfortunately, you know, we're seeing major problems.
I mean, we see that even just here in the capital city. My first week living in Jefferson City, I encountered my first heroin addict. And it was really strange. But, yeah.
Nice segue.
Well, and, you know, to your point, not to beat the prescription drug monitoring deal to death here, but... they're controlled substances. Somebody mentioned this to me yesterday. They're controlled substances by definition. There's a prescription required to get them. How can it be a controlled substance if you're not going to control it? You know. So the flip side of the argument would be if they don't want any laws on it, then we should repeal all the prescription laws. I think that would be kind of insanity. But you have to follow the logic all the way to the end of whatever is being argued. And so, truth and wisdom in this building, you have to do a lot of sorting. It's kind of like looking for a needle in a haystack. And I've been around a few barnyards in my life. There's other things found in the hay, too, and you don't want them.
Wow. Now, something you and a lot of people talk about, and debate about on a regular basis are the term limits. And you mentioned mm-hmm. them a few times already, how term limits really have changed how this building works.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Are term limits something we should consider getting rid of?
Well, I'll tell you, I voted for term limits at the ballot box, and all of the marketing, and I do call it marketing for a reason, was let's get rid of the bums. You know, we had the poster child for why term limits would be a good idea, who served as Speaker of the House for longer than anybody in state history, went to prison, and that was a lot of the push behind term limits. And there is a narrative out there still that everybody's corrupt, which I would just say is not true. There are a lot of statesmen in this building. There are a lot of good people who come up here, give up their time, give up their income.
The majority of people in this building, right?
Absolutely. They give up time with their families to come and serve as citizen legislators. You know, the real crux of the problem is that we as citizens have handed over our birthright, our ability to control the process, because we've given up our that knowledge, knowledge of the process, knowledge of who the people are. The selection of candidates now is not done really by citizens. It's done by consultants and parties in the recruiting process. So we have put ourselves at a significant disadvantage as citizens. Now, my time is almost up. As I said in Springfield a couple of weeks ago, my sentence is almost up. But the thing is, what is happening with the process? Are we functional? You know, somebody, I got into this on Thursday with somebody. They'd filed a bill to term limit all the rest of the statewide officials. And I said, what problem is that going to solve? And what problem have term limits solved? It's created a new set of problems. And the average length of service now, this is interesting. The average length of service in the legislature is actually longer now that you have term limits. It used to be 6 years. Now it's 8, because people don't run until the seat's open. Those that were the people that were here a long time would serve in leadership. So, you know, we got into this debate last week because there was a resolution to call for a constitutional amendment for federal term limits. And I really bristle at the thought of that, because think about the fact that we've handed our, as voters, we've handed over our power to lobbyists and bureaucrats. There's exponentially more bureaucrats at the federal level. We will never be able to get a handle on controlling the problems in D.C. if we go down that road. And, you know, I just made the point last week that the founders looked at all the options before them. They had just gotten done dealing with a king. They decided to have some people in the federal government serve for life, those in the judiciary, as long as it's good behavior. There are people that want to term limit the Supreme Court. It's a disaster of a thought. And, you know, the founders had also experienced term limits. The Articles of Confederation had 6-year term limits, and that government did not work. We had one guy that served as president of the United States for one day. That government didn't work. That's why we had to amend them out of existence, and we have the Constitution we have today. And the only term limits they put in there were the elections every 2 years.
So what if instead of swinging back, you know, the pendulum swings hard, right? So when you all voted for term limits, it was to address a specific instance, and now the pendulum swung the other way.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a middle ground? What about not having term limits, but instead it's 16 years or something a little longer, so that you can't be Speaker of the House for 20 mm-hmm. years, but you can also be around long enough to see your policy through?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're in the budget chair and you're here 2 years, it's really hard to lay the groundwork for change in the legislature.
And there have been a number of
And who would
proposals.
Offer that bill is the real question. Who would go back home to their constituents and say, oh, I want right. to, you know, that's hard to message to voters, because they don't understand what the four of us understand here today.
You're exactly right. And there have been those discussions and proposals. And I would say, while it might seem to improve it, we're one of only 6 states that do a lifetime ban after 8 years. Now, a couple of states actually do that, but they only meet every other year, like Montana. So we're probably kind of on the extreme end with term limits. Some states, like Idaho, that did them legislatively actually repealed them because they realized we don't have enough people to serve. They went all the way to the county level, though, when they did it.
Yeah,
so
that's
nobody could
that's
serve.
A tough one. Yeah.
You know, there were no people. I think it's going to take the citizens actually saying, oh my goodness, we made a mistake. And I'll give you an example where people are starting to say, wow, we fixed a problem with the Constitution and we created a bigger one. A lot of conservatives say the states would be able to stand up to the federal government more if we had not repealed if we didn't have the 17th Amendment, which got rid of election of U.S. senators by popular vote. The corruption that they were fixing was people were buying U.S. Senate seats from legislators around the country. One guy went from Montana, he owned a copper mine up there, late 1800s, and he bought the U.S. Senate seat in New York because, you know, the state legislators decided who it was going to be. And conversely, when there was a problem in D.C., the states wielded a lot of power because they said, if you don't fix whatever it is, we're going to recall you. The legislature did. So they passed the 17th Amendment, which said the senators, the U.S. senators, will be elected by the people in each state. Well, it solved that problem, but it created another one. The states lost their ability to really control the feds. And, oh, by the way, people are still buying U.S. Senate seats. They're just doing it on television. So,
right.
And I'm not suggesting that we go back and change that, but I would say that you're absolutely right. The pendulum swings. I don't know what the solution looks like there, other than the people need to be... It's how much power do the people want back? Because if you move the line, there's still going to be a line. It's just, when do we get to that point? I think the Senate would certainly function better if it was longer, because people are going to be forced, as they used to be forced to respect their colleagues, because they're going to have to deal with them for a while.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of what's going through the subconscious out here. Is, oh, this person's going to be
gone. You can just wait them out.
Right.
Yep.
And even the bureaucrats have said, well, we'll just wait. We'll wait for the new crop, you know. So it's how do we do that? I said on the floor last week, you know, James Madison served for 42 years. Jefferson, I think, was like 39 or 40 in all their public service. And are there going to be bad ones? There's no one perfect. Sure, there's going to be. It's human nature, but I think we can, you know, draw out the good in people. There are so many good people here. We can draw that out and set those good examples, and then the others have somebody to aspire to, something to aspire to, and an example to emulate. So,
I think it's interesting to hear a legislator talk about waiting out till someone leaves, because that's something I hear on a regular basis. Well, oh, they're going to be gone in 6 years or what have you, or oh, I can't wait for that person to be gone. It's something I hear about a few choice lawmakers on a regular basis, but
kind of compounds that lack of respect.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Which is no offense to Becky and all of her lobbyist comrades, but that's not something I hear and amongst government consultants. They are forced to work with each other because, I mean, you can't term limit those that some people think are corrupt. And
which I won't point out, too, and I've said this at home. Somebody said, well, you should ban lobbyists and you should ban... you should max out what lawyers can make. That was the other one I heard. And I was like, are you kidding me?
That's a bit of a stretch,
yeah,
I'd say.
They actually, it was a candidate. You have to understand that as a citizen, we elect people to go and represent us. And then we have to hire somebody to go and protect us from the people that we elect. And those people are called lobbyists. And, you know, we have to have this system because it's also a funnel of information. They serve a very valuable purpose. They're just called lobbyists, by the way, because that's what President Grant they kind of got the nickname because they would all meet in the lobby of the hotel over there.
Oh, that's
there.
So funny.
That's fun. That's a fun. You're a plethora of historical information.
Why do they call them lobbyists?
I was sitting in the gallery listening to you speak on the floor a week ago, and as a lobbyist of myself, and he was like, Senator Dixon is just a history book, and he presents it in this eloquent way where you think history is interesting and fascinating.
Right? Well, it is.
I love history. I'm not a historian, but I love history. I it's so much fun because it makes all this stuff makes sense. I mean, I seriously, the reason I was curious was like, why do they call them lobbyists? It's such a weird name. But that's what happened. They would all, and Grant would go and sit in the lobby of the hotel, and so they all found out, so they would all come and tell them what they wanted.
The lobbyists.
So they started being called lobbyists.
I love it.
I think it's...
forget which hotel it was. It's there. D.C., but yeah.
I have a shameless plug, because the Missouri Times spring edition of the magazine just came out, and in there is a op-ed from Hush Blackwell's lobbyist, Jay Atkins, and it's called Swamp Creatures. And it talks about how, really, lobbyists have turned into a type of swamp creature for a lot of constituents. When, as Jay talks about in his op-ed, if anything, they should want lobbyists to be here in the building. They have the institutional knowledge, and they might understand the issues a lot better than a lot of legislators do because of term limits. They don't have the time to fully understand how this truly large government works.
Mm-hmm. Well, and part of the problem, too, is as voters, we have swallowed hook, line, and sinker this condensed form of citizenship. If it doesn't fit on a postcard or a 30-second television spot, we don't want to spend time on it. And I'm telling you, as voters, people tell me that. They're too busy. And I understand that. But the problem with that is it empowers all of these other things that we as citizens complain about. And I'm guilty of that myself. But what has happened is we've bought this whole narrative of everybody's corrupt, everybody's this, everybody's that. And so it's just modern society. We get our food in a drive-thru. Everything's a microwave system. We want it now, we want it fast, and we don't want to deal with, having to really work out the details of things. And it kind of enables that swamp, if you will, because we're not cleaning it up as citizens. You know, we heard a lot about draining the swamp. We're all in the swamp. We have created this system. So, but we've got to have folks who are willing to make it better. And I think that it really falls to all of us as citizens. And, when we do that, I think we'll see changes. I had somebody tell me, this has been a long time ago, she said, term limits will never work until you term limit everybody. The staff, the lobbyists, the bureaucrats, and she said, of course you can't do that, but it makes about as much sense. And because otherwise the people's elected representatives are at a unique disadvantage. And who does that really empower? It empowers the very people, whoever they are, that the citizens are trying to, deal with in one way or another. So I've given it a lot of thought over the years, and I certainly don't have a handle on the perfect solution, but I think we've got to consider what the alternatives are, and we certainly would not say to any private entity, you can't have a representative hired in Jefferson City to protect you from government. And that's what we're talking about. That's who we call the lobbyists. And I mean, everybody, this is the other thing I tell citizens, everybody has a lobbyist, whether you realize it or not. I mean, if you're a senior citizen, there's the AARP, there's the Heart Association, there's the police, there's, fill in the blank, everybody.
Yeah, for Kit, yeah,
everybody.
Exactly.
And so, it is a funnel of information, and it's who do you want asking the questions, Mr. and Mrs. Voter? who do you want asking the questions? Do you want the senator or the representative asking the lobbyist questions because they don't know and they are brand new to the building and they're gone in a few years? Or do you want the lobbyist and the staff asking the people that you hired to come up and represent you? You want them asking them questions. And I think if the people will answer that question, we'll probably see term limits go away, but it'll take a while.
Speaking of questions, we have 5 of them.
Okay.
Better segue than your heroin addict in the street in Jeff City, I must say.
You know, in case you haven't noticed, I'm a little under the weather.
It's okay. It's early. We are forgiving.
I mean,
right?
It's almost 11 a.m., Becky.
Well, I was thinking about for the Senate, your colleague who's taking a nap right now, Scott Bond. He's trying to give you a pass, but...
You know, I'll let him.
Okay.
It's okay.
He's very high in my book, but he goes up even higher, having stayed later than I did.
He's a soldier.
Did he miss the Cardinals game for that?
I'm not sure.
That's quite
he probably
that
screamed
is,
it on
that
his
is
phone.
Quite a,
probably did.
He's a multitasker.
He is. He's one of the few men I know that can truly multitask.
That's quite a sacrifice.
First question, Senator Dixon. Where is your dream vacation? Because as you said, your sentence is almost up.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would love to take my wife somewhere in Africa.
That's
I like
a good
that
dream
idea.
Vacation.
I like that idea.
Love to.
It's a great dream vacation.
Somewhere that we haven't been. We'll be celebrating our 25th anniversary in September.
Wow.
Congratulations.
Thank you. She likes the beach. I would love to go to maybe Alaska, so we figured the good compromise would be like maybe like...
Alaska would be incredible.
My stepson has convinced people in Alaska walk around on skis because of pharmaceutical commercials. And every time he sees them, he's like, I want to do that. I want to walk around on skis. I'm like, dude, you can barely walk at all. You're 7 years old.
So they don't walk on skis.
I don't know. I've never been to Alaska. But speaking of kids, whenever you were a kid,
mm-hmm.
What did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to do what I'm doing now and serve. There was a time where I thought I wanted to do some kind of ministry. And really, if you do this job right, it's sort of the same. I mean, you're serving people, so, yeah.
What is your favorite book? Because clearly you've done some reading.
I love books.
Yeah, that's a tough question for...
I love books. I don't make it all the way through them. I start and I find something interesting and something else. I really find a lot of help in the Proverbs because just trying to keep myself in line so I can get along with people.
I might need to take a page out of your book.
Yeah, no kidding.
Now, as a senator from Southwest Missouri, you do a lot of driving.
Mm-hmm.
What do you like to listen to in the car?
Well, most of my time in the car is taken up with returning phone calls. So I do, on the way up, I listen to a constituent. And I do a lot of returning phone calls. Sometimes I'll listen to music, but usually it's windshield time, and you know we do a lot of driving vacations in our family, so we kind of joke that the windshield is like a movie screen. I enjoy just being, you know, just looking and enjoying the scenery. Sometimes I'll turn some music on, and it's usually whatever station is on. As I'm going through.
Yeah, in your line of work, you don't get a lot of quiet time, so you probably... I enjoy the car also.
Yeah.
It's, being in politics has made me really love being in a car. No one can come find you.
Exactly.
They can only text or call. You can pretend you don't have service. It is the one place to get peace and quiet.
Yeah.
I just learned things there.
Yeah? Who is your favorite superhero?
I like Captain America. I was really not into the superheroes, but when the whole remake movies came out here a few years ago, we took the girls and went to see several of those. And that was about the time that I was doing the criminal code with Senator Justice and the Representatives Cox and Kelly. And somebody had done the poster, because it was about the same time they did the poster, and we were all different superheroes, so... and that was when Target came out with the shirts. They had the special shirts. So I got the corresponding shirt and handed them out in committee. So anyway, they made me Captain America. I was like, okay, I got to learn about this guy. He's pretty cool.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
Captain America.
It's an issue. Like, I'm really into Pam Carter. And since I met my husband, I've learned everything I possibly could about superheroes. Because I think that's how you be a good wife, is you learn more than your husband knows about his own interests. And Captain America truly is the epitome of what you can be as a patriot. I mean, he fought in multiple wars. He was developed into literally a super soldier with super soldier serum. Anyway, that's all we have for you today. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Republic Service and the St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce. This has been Rachel and Becky. We've been here with Senator Bob Dixon from Southwest Missouri, and we thank you so much for your time and the use of your office, sir.
Thank you. It was enjoyable.
Thank you so much.